Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Star Grill Shop on Shepherd at 59.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank. I'm Branham. Austin Rodriguez filling in for Brian today. He's a slacker. He's a huge slacker, that Brian McDonald. Anyways, we're at Texas Star Grill Shop on Shepherd. This is a great spot. Great spot to get your grills. It's a great spot just to come hang out. They have this local organic meat that they sell. Like, you have to know about it. They always come whenever they put it there at the beginning of each week. And the people that know about it, if you're in the know, they come in here and they buy it as quickly as it's out there. So you have to get here really quick, but it's fantastic. It's your spot for all of your grilling supplies, everything that you need to grill. And, of course, they sell grills here, pizza ovens, the flat tops. Fantastic, fantastic spot. And, of course, Memorial Day weekend, a huge, huge deal for Texas Star Grill Shop. Check out some of these deals that they have going on. You can save up to $500 on a Traeger grill. You can save up to $800 on a Blaze, $900 on a Weber, $300 on Gosney pizza ovens, $200 on Napoleon grills. Huge package deals on the Big Green Egg. And, oh, yeah, they're going to give you free delivery everywhere in the greater Houston area. So take advantage of that. If you've been in the market to buy a new grill, you need to talk to the folks here at Texas Star Grill Shop before you buy a grill. And there's also going to be a really good chance that you do buy your grill here, because they're going to take care of you every step of the way. We'll be here until 6. Swing on by. And then, of course, they'll be open all Memorial Day weekend so you can get your grill game started. And again, if you don't have a grill, talk to them before you do anything else. They have the best grills at the best price. They have the quality stuff, not the cheap stuff you find at the big box stores, so make sure you talk to them before you do buy your grill. We know that Ronel Blanco is coming back on Sunday now. The Astros announced their weekend rotation. Ronel Blanco, he's going to serve his suspension. He's coming back on Sunday. And the question now is, okay, well, now what? Now what for the Houston Astros? You had to carry Ronel Blanco, so it's not like you have an extra pitcher on the roster right now. You have 13 pitchers. Ronel Blanco is one of them. He just couldn't play in 10 games because he had the sticky stuff. He had the rosin. So now what? Now that Ronel Blanco is coming back on Sunday, what are the steps around Ronel Blanco? Because he is starting. He's going to be in the rotation. And now you have 7 guys on this roster who are starters.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they choose to do, because you and I had talked about the fact that when he was suspended, it was going to be like evaluating the guys' performances in their next 1 to 2 starts when it comes to Arrigetti, when it comes to Hunter Brown, when it comes to guys that could potentially be primary starters in a 5 or 6, in this case, 6-man rotation. To me, I know you and I have gone back and forth on it. I think Arrigetti has pitched better than Hunter Brown recently, although Hunter Brown's start yesterday was extremely encouraging. It's going to be an interesting decision. I think Arrigetti ultimately is going to be the guy that's going to be the odd man out, because, as we discussed, keep him stretched out, keep him, throwing down in Sugar Land in case of an injury, but I don't think he's the right guy to put into a bullpen role, because I don't think he's ever done it before. I don't think you want to experiment with him on the major league level, because you can't afford hiccups now based on the fact that you're playing catch up. And I think that Hunter Brown can do whatever you need him to do on the major league level.
Yeah, I would, for me, it's Brown. I think, Spencer Arrigetti's been pretty good in 2 of his last 3. Hunter Brown's been all right in his last 4 starts. I don't know if you caught this. I saw it this morning in the Rome piece. You know that Hunter Brown's added an extra pitch? you've been wanting him to trim down his pitches. He actually added the sinker to his arsenal. And the Chandler Rome story says that he hasn't thrown that since he was at Wright State in college. Baseball Savant shows that he threw it a little bit last year, but maybe they just got the pitch wrong. Like, maybe he didn't register the right pitch. So he's added the sinker. And they said that he's added the sinker since the Seattle start on May 5th. So he's added the sinker to his arsenal. In the last 4 games since he's had the sinker, against Seattle, it wasn't great. 2 runs runs, 4 1/3. It wasn't like Kansas City, though, whenever he got lifted in the first inning after giving up 9 runs. So he gave it 2 runs and 4 1/3 against Seattle when he added the sinker. The next one was at Detroit, which was that relief appearance, which he pitched really well. He gave up 1 run over 5 innings. The Milwaukee start, 4 runs over 5 innings, and then yesterday, 2 runs over 6 innings. Hunter Brown, since adding his sinker in 4 appearances, all of them, 3 of them starts, all of them long outings, his ERA is under 4. Like, Hunter Brown's, since he's added the sinker, has actually been okay. He's been good. And it's not to, like, put down Spencer Arrighetti, because Arrighetti's been good in 2 of his last 3 starts. I think that with Hunter Brown adding that pitch, Hunter Brown, like, trending in the right way, Hunter Brown being with the team for a longer period of time, I think the move is they're going to send Arrighetti down, and they're going to add another reliever, and I think it's going to be Dubin once he's, you know, qualified, once he has enough days in the minors.
Yeah, and I think when you look at it, I don't mind him going back to a pitch like that if it's better, more effective, and he can control it better than that knuckle curveball that he was throwing right in the middle of the plate, hanging there screaming, hit me, on far too many occasions. If that's a pitch that he feels like can keep guys a little bit more off balance, it's a little bit more off speed than it is some of the pitches, the harder pitches that he throws, fine, as long as he can locate it, and as long as it can be a replacement pitch for the pitch or two that have been absolutely getting hammered all over the park when he can't locate them, that's fine to me. But I think you're right. In terms of just the fact that Brown has had the experience, he's come out of the pen for you in the playoffs. He's also been a guy that, you know, he knows he's been penciled in as a starter for quite a while, and he knows what to do and how to do it. To where Arrighetti, I think, is going to be fine. I'm not sure he expected at the start of the year to come up, and he didn't know when he would be here. He got a lot of valuable experience. He started to really settle down and settle in. And I don't think that it's the last you hear from him. I think you can just send him down easier, and I think that, you know, everything will work itself out from there.
Yeah, it was interesting reading. It was a really good piece. It's interesting about why he added it. He added it because it's kind of got some run into a righty, and he felt that hitters were diving over, especially right-handed hitters. They felt, and he and the pitching staff felt, that right-handed hitters were diving over the plate and taking away that slider, taking away, because even his fastball has a little bit of a cutter run, so they were diving and cheating for the outside half right-handed hitters were, and they were just sitting on those pitches because there wasn't something that Hunter Brown could throw in on the hands of a righty on the inside of half of the plate. And that sinker kind of has some downward, inward run, so they're trying to use that to better sequence all of his other stuff. And he says, and, you know, who knows, you know, what it actually means, but he feels like right-handed hitters aren't cheating as much going with the slider and the cutter because he does have that sinker that's coming in and riding in on the hands of these right-handed hitters. And we saw him break a couple bats yesterday.
I was going to say, the thing yesterday to me was whether he was using that pitch or he was using the two-seamer that had a ride that kind of went inside. He definitely was trying to reestablish the inside part of the plate. You mentioned it. I mean, he was sawing off bats. He was going in on the hands. He had really good movement. Even if he started a ball on the inner third, it was riding in on hitters, which is something that can keep guys off balance, which can keep them from, like he was talking about, getting out over the plate, and can give him an advantage on the outside when he wants to go there, even if he might not be able to fine-tune where he puts it. Maybe guys aren't going to be as apt to get to that outside pitch if they're being pushed off the plate by pitches that can ride in on them.
Yeah, that was it's interesting because I do think that that's going to be the move. Like Rennell Blanco, you're not ousting him for the rotation. The Astros, today's their only off day in this 29-30 game stretch, so they're still going to play a bunch of games in a row. I think it's 19 games in a row. So the Astros are going to go with the 6-man rotation. They're going to need a 6 guy. The decision's going to be Hunter Brown or Spencer Arrighetti, and then whoever is the guy that gets, you know, ousted out of the rotation, the question is going to be, can that guy be our long reliever? I think if it's Hunter Brown, the answer is yes. Yep. I think if it's Spencer Arrighetti, they're going to want to keep him stretched out. That way, if they need a spot starter, they need an emergency starter, that he could be called up from Sugar Land and come pitch 5 innings without, you know, taxing your bullpen too much. But it is going to be nice for the Astros to finally not have to be upside down in their bullpen and have an extra arm, because Rennell Blanco, you haven't had him, you had to keep him on the roster, but he hasn't been able to pitch, of course, because he's been suspended.
It's going to be interesting to see how he pitches, too. But before we get to that, I think one of the things you mentioned, I only bring this up for the context of starter going to the bullpen, too. With a guy like Arrighetti, who hasn't really been that kind of guy to do that kind of work, you think about it, we talk about routine. We talk about the fact that they have a certain way that they get ready to when they're going to throw the baseball. And from an Odorizzi standpoint, we knew how big of a problem that was. We knew how long it took. We knew that it was something he was not happy with. Whether you're happy with it or not, it's an adjustment. And I don't think they want to do that with Eric Gedde at this point. I think that Brown's done that before, and he knows what to do to get himself ready. So that saves you a couple of steps in the process, too, if that in case that indeed is the case and he ends up going to the pen again.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. 7557, Eric Gedde seems like a guy the Astros would like to develop into a long-term starter, whereas Brown seems like a candidate to become the long reliever. We've seen that from him before, not Eric Gedde. I don't agree with that. I don't think that the Astros' long-term plan on Hunter Brown is they want him to be a reliever. I think it's in their ultimate desire that Hunter Brown can reach his potential and become more consistent and be a middle-of-the-rotation starter for the Houston Astros. I don't think that Dana Brown – and look, Dana Brown talks up his players all the time, but Dana Brown, when he talks about Hunter Brown, calls him a future ace. Like, you're not – and I know Dana Brown talks a lot, and he talks his guys up. I really don't think it's their desire, though, for him to be a middle reliever. They're gonna exhaust every single possibility for him to become a starter, and we've seen that when he's going well, he can be pretty good in that role.
Well, let's also – let's be real. If he's going to go to the pen for the long term, I think that the idea would be he would be either a closer or he would be a setup guy, a back of the bullpen guy, because we know that he can reach, you know, very really above average numbers with his fastball. We know he has two pitches that are really good out pitches, and if you're bringing him in to empty the tank for one inning, and you think about the fact he probably can put a mile an hour or two more on the fastball, he can really be more effective in terms of the velocity and where he throws and how he throws his pitches. I think if you're thinking about him ever in that long-term role as a bullpen guy, that's where he would be. But I agree with you. I think he's penciled in as a rotational guy, and ideally they'd like him to be a top-of-the-rotation guy, but that would take some work on his part, kind of fine-tuning control and things.
Yeah, I think you, like, that's the hierarchy of what you want Hunter Brown to be. It's like starter way up here, a huge drop-off. They're not even thinking about him as a reliever yet. It's starter way up here, and then if they feel like, okay, it's not really working out as a starter thing, they want him to be like a back end of the bullpen guy. Mm-hmm. Currently not with Hader, because, you know, Hader's on a five-year deal, et cetera, et cetera. But you're not going to go from starter to mop-up guy. You're not going to go from a starter, you have the aspirations of being a middle to the top of the rotation pitcher, to becoming Brandon Belak. Like, the next step would be, okay, well, if he's not going to cut it as a starter, which the jury's still out on that, well, let's see if we can convert him into this back of the bullpen type of reliever. And then if that doesn't work is when you start to see him go down further and further the different rungs on the ladder. But him as a mop-up guy, that's not really in the Astros' plans. Now, because they have a surplus of starters, you know, maybe he's giving them 3-4 innings if he's kicked out of the rotation as kind of more of a piggyback, not necessarily a long reliever mop-up type.
That's what I was going to say. You're not going to see him long-term, I don't think, in the bullpen plans. But I think for this season specifically, because you're going to be continuously getting pitchers back, because you're going to be continuously kind of tinkering with who your rotational guys are going to be based on those things and how they perform and just how they're feeling based on how the team's performing, I think there's a chance that he finds another stint where he's there kind of not just mopping up, but he's doing split starts. And especially if you get guys back like McCullers, like Garcia, guys that maybe aren't going to ever be stretched out to give you 7, 6, 7, 8 innings, that he's going to be the guy ready to go on the backside of those starts too, because he's just like having a second starter ready to go. So for this year, I think he could be in the bullpen in that role.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's because, you know, just because of the surplus of starters that you do have. Do you think Brown's trending in the right direction? Looking at the last four starts, adding the sinker, and then last night's start, yesterday's start?
Well, I think also because, you know, kind of under the radar, he's eliminated the usage on the knuckle curveball. And the fact that he's more cognizant of kind of controlling the zone by going inside, and he seemed to really be fastball centric and hard stuff centric, which is above average on the major league level with what he's got, that I do think he's trending in the right direction.
Yeah, I think he's trending in the right direction too, and it does make sense with the sinker kind of sequencing his stuff better. That knuckle curve that he throws, you just pull up the numbers on the knuckle curve. Opponents are hitting 400 this year against his knuckle curve with a slug. Like, it's better. Well, worse. An 800 slugging. I'm not sure there's a player in baseball that has an 800 slugging. And Hunter Brown's knuckle curve has an 800 slugging. I think the best slugging percentage in baseball right now is probably Shohei Ohtani. Kyle Tucker's probably second in slugging. I bet
Soto's
you his slugging.
Gotta be up there.
I don't know.
No?
Because he walks a ton.
He hit two bombs again last night.
I mean, think about it, because the OPS – oh, he hit two last night?
I think he hit two last night.
That way, that would certainly impact things when you look at that specific category. The leader in slugging is Shohei Ohtani at 646. Opponents against Hunter Brown's 800. They have an 800 slugging percentage on Hunter Brown's knuckle curve. The leader currently in baseball, Shohei Ohtani, with a 646. Kyle Tucker is at 638. He leads the American League.
Now, think about how many times, Jeremy, you've said this year since the season started, when have you seen in all of baseball someone that's done this with numbers? It's all negative. It's Abreu being the worst hitter of all time, and it's the fact that when you look at numbers on a pitcher like Hunter Brown, that one pitch has that devastatingly bad results, but he was continuing to use it, just like continuing to use Abreu at first base when he was that historically bad. It's been a tough start to the year, man.
Yeah, that's pretty high. I didn't realize it was up. I knew it wasn't good, but that's pretty high. And he, like you mentioned, like his usage of it, his fastball is the pitch that he throws the most, 372. And then his cutter, his split finger, and his knuckle curve are all basically tied for second. Cutter 112 times, splitty 111, knuckle curve 108. And that's with him not throwing it as often the last four start or appearances.
Take the knuckle curve out, take the new pitch, and put it wherever you want, and that's it.
800 slugging. That's insane. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Rene Blanco coming back Sunday. What now? What do the Astros do to the pitching staff to kind of round it into shape? Do you think Hunter Brown's trending in the right direction? And we got to bring up Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman is he's slumping again. What do you do with this lineup now that Bregman is slumping? That Jose Abreu's back maybe this weekend or early next week. What is the skip Joe Espada supposed to do about this lineup? We'll get to some of the Texan stuff too. OTAs going on over there. Certain Houston Texan has me fired up about this Houston Texan offense. How fired up should we be? Everybody's talking about Caitlin Clark, so we'll talk a little bit about Caitlin Clark. It is a Thursday, which means it's Bad Take Boulevard. What are the worst takes of the week? 713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. ESPN Houston on YouTube. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Bram. What is Espada supposed to do with Bregman slumping and Abreu coming back this weekend, potentially, or early next week? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, a moment for X-Golf and Katie. Best golf simulators in the area. Only X-Golf simulators in the area. And you got to check them out if you play golf. If you play golf and you want a spot that can allow you to continue to get swings in and have some fun playing golf, even when it's dark outside or the weather's not conducive to making your tee time, you got to check out X-Golf and Katie. And if you want to watch sporting events and hang out with like-minded people in a great environment with tons of TVs, great food and beverage, you go to X-Golf as well. It's the best of both worlds. It's the best sports bar environment, meeting the best golf simulators, all under one roof, conveniently located right off 99 and I-10 in the Katy area. Fantastic. Chris does a phenomenal job. He's got a pro on staff that can give you lessons. But if you just want to get some swings in, you can play 50 courses worldwide. Real courses. They're right there for you on the best golf simulators on the planet, in my opinion. And if you want to work on your game, it can be treated just like a range. And even the putting and the chipping is just as realistic as you could possibly imagine a simulator to be. Phenomenal. Absolutely something for a golfer and for everybody else with the sports bar as well. Get online right now and go to and check out X-Golf Katy, because if you go there once as a golfer, you're going to be there a lot, because it is, with the heat coming, a great spot to get swings in and not have to deal with the elements. Tell them I said you bye.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Star Grill Shop on Shepherd and 59.
Best grills at the best price right here at Texas Star Grill Shop. Get your Memorial Day weekend started right with the Memorial Day weekend extravaganza. Huge sales on all top grill brands, saving hundreds on almost every single one of them. Also, if you're in the business of getting a new outdoor kitchen, the things that they can do here, unbelievable. They offer free design services for outdoor kitchens, so you can just get an idea of what you want. Custom cabinetry, which is fantastic, made for the outside. It's basically taking your kitchen to the outside, which is it's awesome. So get out here, talk to them. Even if you're not going to buy, like, just come talk to them, get an idea. Maybe you're going to buy in a year, maybe you're going to buy in 3 years, but come talk to them, get an idea for pricing, see what you have to save up for. A great spot. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What is a skipper to do? What is the most interesting manager of the war in the world supposed to do now that you're getting back slappy Jose Abreu? He's going to come back, according to Dana Brown, when he was on with QB1, said at the potentially the end of this weekend or early next week. So he's either going to join him in Oakland, maybe for the third game of that series, or for the opener in Seattle, which I don't love that he would come back against Seattle. Now, he did also say that John Singleton is their first baseman. But then you couple that with Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman in his last eight games, because Bregman, he had that little, like, you know, three-game sample. Hey, I mean, he hit the ball pretty good for a little while. Once he got demoted to the sixth spot, like, he had a pretty good little stretch there. Hit three home runs in 2 days, but was getting hits after hits. He was on a six-game hitting streak, and then a spotter moved him back to the fourth spot. In eight games since being moved back into the cleanup spot, he's hitting 129 with an on-base of 200, with a slugging of 194, with an OPS of 394. It was worse than what it was before he went on that little bit of a hot span. He's 4 for his last 31. Everybody knows the 0 for 15 in this series, or 0 for his last 15. He's 0 for 13 in the series, 0 for his last 15. What do you do with this lineup if you're Joe Espada?
To me, I just hope to God that I see, starting tomorrow night, Bregman back in the six hole. I just think that's the only thing that you can do at this point, because you take a team that was just futile trying to hit the baseball yesterday against a guy that's okay but hasn't had great numbers since he left the Dodgers to the Angels and got the big money, and you made him look like a Cy Young Award winner. And you know you've got some guys that are actually hitting the baseball right now, and you don't know how long it's – You know what, Jake's hitting the ball better, and that's why they've moved him up anyway. But Peña has been consistent no matter where you move him in the lineup. He seems to that he's hitting the baseball. Yordan's heating up. Tuck's been on fire. Altuve has been steady at the leadoff. So if you go Altuve and you go Peña and you go Yordan and you go Tuck, you already have four guys right there that should bump down Alex Bregman at least one. Then with all the other guys that you have to choose from the other outfielders to Yiner, to whatever else you want to do and move Jake up, Bregman should go right back to the six hole, because what was working when he started to finally hit the baseball, he was lower in the lineup, he was a little bit more relaxed, and all of a sudden it started to get hits and he had some production. Don't move him around when he's producing while you have other guys that have been steadier all season long, and don't be so quick to push him back up there, kind of jumpstart, which was already, hey, we already know what happened with Abreu. That they just kept on riding him out there. They just kept riding that horse, hoping that one day he was going to be a thoroughbred again, until he broke down and was a step away from the glue factory. And they had to do something drastic. Leave him in the sixth hole, put him back there, and then for this foreseeable future, until he really starts to pick it up again, you can evaluate it. Don't do it too quickly. Put him back where he belongs.
Yeah, I mean, I give him credit for – I thought that they were pretty aggressive with Abreu this year, actually. Like, last year they weren't. He stayed in the cleanup spot for almost the entire year. Certainly never, you know, talked to him about going down to West Palm Beach. This year they were pretty quick to move Abreu down in the lineup. And then, I mean, it's pretty unprecedented that he went down to West Palm Beach on his own accord. Now, maybe it was a handshake agreement. Who knows? But I thought they were pretty aggressive with how quickly they either moved Abreu down or got Abreu out of the lineup. I felt they were slow to do it with Bregman, probably because Bregman's younger. He was, you know, good last year. It has done more here. And, I mean, Bregman had a good year last year. He started slow like he always starts slow, but this year was pretty historic. But you can't live with that production. Like a 129 average, a 200 on base, a 194 slug, and you're going to start a seven-game roadie. Like, it's harder to win on the road most years, not last year. Four of those games are against the first-place Seattle Mariners. So, and like, I know there's a lot of people that, you know, maybe write for the team or a beat on the team, that they mentioned that Alex Bregman's not going to get moved down again. Are we sure about that? Because he should. I'm with you. I would move everybody up a spot. I don't really – like, I think six is fine for Bregman. Plus, he got kind of hot there. Let's see if he can get hot there again. Peña's not your prototypical cleanup man. I really don't care about prototypical guys and prototypical spots. Like, go with the guy who's hitting. I'm not moving Tucker from the two-hole. He's on fire. So I would do what you said, too. I'd move everybody up a spot. I'd probably bat Singleton fifth. But if Myers bats fifth, that's fine. That's where I'm at with Bregman, too. Like, you're not taking him out of the lineup. You really don't have a better option. Some would say, play Mauricio Dubon. Yeah, you got to play Bregman.
And from the standpoint, too, of Abreu, the thing that you're right, they did move him down quicker than I even thought. But I think that they have more connected to Alex Bregman to where they were trying to stay loyal to some degree. They know his contract's coming up. They want to make sure they didn't ruffle feathers. And, again, because he's a slow starter, they were expecting more. From an Abreu standpoint, it wasn't just to move him down. It was when you were just going to sit him down, just flat out sit his butt on the bench and say, you can be on the big club, but you're not going to play for a while. I think that that should have happened well a lot earlier than it did because of the lack of production, because they were so putrid at first base when you know it's a corner infield spot you need to get production from. I didn't expect this mutual agreement to come where there was this other option, but if you were going to pay him and hang on to him, his butt should have been on the bench as a pinch hitter at the very best.
Now, I do like that Dana Brown, look, Dana Brown's not filling out the lineup, but I do like that Dana Brown said whenever he was talking to QB1 on the flagship the other day that John Singleton's our first baseman. So, like, that at least to me seems like Abreu's going to get some spot starts here and there, probably against lefties. But it seems to me like Jose Abreu is going to have to work his way back into the lineup and work his way into consistent at-bats. So that part I'm encouraged about. Like, okay, calling him up, that's one thing. Playing him over a guy who's producing better than him is another thing. So as long as Singleton's still getting a majority of those at-bats at first base, I'm cool letting Abreu start once every four or five games. And if Abreu earns it because he's hitting in those four or five games, can he elevate himself up to a platoon option where he's starting against lefties? Okay, if he can do that, great. If he gets hot and then all of a sudden turns into like the last month of the year Jose Abreu, great. So I don't love the idea that he's back, but I understand that he's making $19.5 million and he probably had to be back at some point. But this is the way that you have to ease him back in. He has to earn at bats. I don't want him starting more than once, particularly only against lefties. But if he starts to roll a little bit, he can earn playing time that way. But right now I'm starting him off just one of every four games maximum.
Do you not think Espada was talking out of both sides of his mouth a little bit?
Could
because
be.
In one interview, he says that Singleton's his starting.
Well, that
first
was Brown. I'm talking about Brown. Dana Brown said that.
Okay, all right. Because I heard Espada last night with the media. It was pregame, saying that this team needs Jose Abreu back, and for this team to be what we thought it was going to be, he's going to have to come back. He's coming back at some point because we need him. Need is a very strong word. Because I don't need Jose Abreu in the lineup if he's going to be the Jose Abreu we saw ever since he basically put on an Astros uniform, with the exception of that little late spurt after he spent some time on the IL last season. Because you can get better options. Yeah, Singleton's not hitting for average, but at least he's giving you pop. He's had some really timely home runs. He's not killing you defensively like Abreu was as well when it was a complete meltdown.
Yeah.
To where I don't know who's on the same page and who's on the Crane gang and who's out of the email chain, but I just feel like they got to get on the same page and realize for right now, John Singleton is and should be, to your point, the everyday starting first baseman with maybe one game a week. And at the same time, I don't want to hear anybody say, in order for this team to be what we need it to be, you need Jose Abreu back.
I mean, I'm with you, but publicly as a manager, I think you have to say that.
You're trying to set the table, I guess.
You're trying to protect Abreu. Like, you're protecting Abreu. You're trying to, you know, talk him up a bit. I don't, like, if you gave him true serum and, like, you had a pop with him, gentlemen, he probably doesn't say that. Like, and I think you've shown that you can win without him. Like, obviously you can win without him. He's been awful. I think that's trying to gas him up. I don't think that there's a whole lot of stock in that. But I was encouraged that Brown said, okay, the Singleton's our guy. Now, I said once every four games. You said once every seven games against – I primarily want him only against lefties. What is the most – right away, I mean, if he gets hot, that's another thing. But right now he's coming back maybe this weekend, early next week. What is the most you want to – you can live with Abreu starting? Once every 7 days?
Maximum twice.
Okay, so that's once every 3.5. I'm once every 4. We're right around the same spot. 713-780-ESPN. But no more than that.
Like, no
more than that until he earns it. He's got to earn it.
But think about, here's the flip side of it too, Jeremy. What happened? Singleton got going when he got consistent at bats. When he knew he was going to be in the lineup, he knew he wasn't looking over his shoulder and realizing, well, I better do something. I'm only going to get this game and this game and this game. Now all of a sudden, it's a dual effect. It's a domino effect. If you're going to throw him in there more, then you're going to take Singleton out less. Now, mentally, where's he going to be when it took getting in the lineup consistently for him to show us what he could do?
Yeah. No, I want Singleton to continue to get the run of the play, too, until Abreu proves that he's better, if he's better. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Texas Star Grill Shop. What are your biggest questions? You know, the Astros are the 50-game point. What are your biggest questions for the final 112? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. One of the things you should be doing this summer is going to watch some Sabercat rugby. This is a steal of a deal because you're getting in very, very cheap. If you mention ESPN, ESPN 97.5, whenever you buy tickets online at HoustonSabercats.com, you're going to get 20% off. So you're already getting a cheap deal. You're going to get 20% off of those cheap tickets, and you're going to watch the best rugby team in the league. They lead the Western Conference 10-1. This past weekend, they beat the Chicago Hounds. Next home game, June 8th. At Sabercats Stadium at 7 p.m. as the Sabercats hosting RFC Los Angeles. You know, we don't like those teams from L.A. So get there at Sabercats Stadium and root against RFC L.A. And for your Houston Sabercats, first place Houston Sabercats. And, oh, yeah, by the way, June 8th is 713 night for the Sabercats. They'll be honoring H-Town with $7.13 tickets in specific areas in the stadium to represent Houston. They want to take care of you, Houstonians, so you can get into the stadium to watch the first place Sabercats for just $7.13. Where else can you beat that value? Nowhere else. Get to Sabercats Stadium. Special guests that night include Hall of Famer Calvin Murphy. Others, there'll be more surprises as well. And again, get your tickets for any game in June, not just the one June 8th, but any game in June for 20% off your tickets. That's right, 20% off of any Sabercat home game in June when you use promo code ESPN20. That's ESPN20 when you're checking out and receive the discount. It's that simple. 20% off of these tickets to watch the first place Sabercats. Do it now at HoustonSabercats.com. Go to HoustonSabercats.com. Get your tickets right now.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Star Grill Shop on Shepherd at 59. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank on Branham. Killer Bees are at Texas Star Grill Shop. Big Memorial Day weekend extravaganza. Free delivery in greater Houston area. Can't top that. How about this? $100 off Traeger Grills, $800 off Blaze Grills, $900 off Weber, $300 off Gosney Pizza Ovens. Right over there. Those look fantastic. $200 off Napoleon. This is your spot. Getting a grill in this city, you got to start at Texas Star Grill Shop. Even if you don't purchase it here, just start here. Talk to the people. Get learned up about the grill game. Don't fall for that trap of those cheap grills that you see when you walk into those big box stores. You walk in, oh, look at this price on this. It's a terrible grill. It's not a good grill. You don't want to do that. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What are your biggest questions remaining over the final 112 games? The Astros are at the 50-game point, if you can believe that. It's hard to believe this team has already played 50 games this year. Mm-hmm. Feels like yesterday was opening day. I guess that's what happens when you're trying to play catch-up, though. Whenever you're playing catch-up, the season seems to start shortening pretty quickly. What is helping the Astros, though? Everybody else in the American League West is losing. The Mariners lost yesterday. The Rangers lost yesterday. And then you know what happened today? They've already played.
They lost.
They both lost. Seattle lost 5-0 at New York. The only game they won in that series was a miraculous comeback.
Yep.
And then Philly beat Texas today 5-2. So you're not in a good spot record-wise. 22-28 through 50 games, not where anybody thought you would be. You're 4.5 behind in the division, and you're 4.5 behind the final wild card. So you're still very much firmly in the race and the thick of things in the American League. So where you're at in the standings doesn't really represent where your record is at, and that's the good thing. Yes, the record's awful, not good for a team this talented, but certainly in the race in the American League. So what are the biggest questions that you have going forward in the final 112, now at the 50-game point? 6941, can you imagine the boos ringing out if we start losing with Abreu and Bregman going 0-for? I think that's why they're bringing Abreu back for the road trip.
I don't think he's coming back for the road trip, Jeremy.
What do you mean?
He's starting in Sugar Land, and they want him to play at least two games.
Right, but this is—I mean—it's a seven-game road.
I know, but I don't, and I think I was listening to Paul and Joe on the way in too, and they brought this up as well. But the more I was thinking about it, I don't want Jose Abreu in the lineup for games against Seattle when, like you said, we're only 4.5 out of first place and catching the Mariners, and every one of those games is important, and they beat you at home. I'd rather have John Singleton in the lineup, put my best lineup out there for four games, and say, yeah, when we get home, if you want to put him in the lineup for a couple games against the Twins, okay, I'm fine with that. I'd rather run the risk of him getting booed at home a little bit than I would putting him out there in the middle of a lineup against the Seattle Mariners when those games are hyper important.
I hear you, But I'm going off of what Dana Brown said. And Dana Brown, now they did kind of move the timeline a little bit, said that there was rumors that he would make the trip to Oakland, and now it's like back of the weekend, early next week. I just don't see, unless, you know, Jose Abreu just is awful, like even if he's awful, I just don't see Dana Brown like going back on that word.
But let's think about this too. It made sense to me from the standpoint of you're on the road to get him his first games. He had success there last year. That's when he hit his first home run of the season last year, and he sprinted around the bases, slid into the dugout, kind of endeared himself more to his teammates. And also the A's pitching staff isn't close to what the Mariners are. And when you talk about the competition level being upped a notch and how important those games are against Seattle, you also realize they have one of the best young pitching staffs in all of baseball. If there are guys that get guys out more consistently between the two staffs, I'm thinking it's Seattle, not Oakland. So when I look at it, it made sense to get him some reps and ABs and starts in Oakland. It doesn't make sense at all to me, except for the fact that it's away from Minute Maid where he can't get booed. I don't want him in that Mariners series.
Yeah, but if we're saying he's only going to play once every four games, he's only going to play in one of them.
Okay, that's fine. I would rather just, you know, get him some games again because he was only pitching against lower level hitting against lower level competition in Florida. Get him some games this week against Triple-A competition. So again, you get another gauge as to how much the bat speed is improved, the contact, and all those things. Mm-hmm. And then let him just go 30 miles over to the ballpark and let him get his start in at home.
Look, I like your idea better. I think that Dana's, like, what Dana's path is what it's going to be. Like, I like your plan much better. I think we're going to see him back on the road.
But doesn't it make sense? If you're going to throw him out on the road, play him against Oakland.
Yeah, but, I mean, they said maybe back of the weekend. So maybe he's in the lineup on Sunday. Maybe he's in the lineup Sunday, one game in the Oakland series, and then he plays once against Seattle. I haven't seen, like, who the pitching probables are, so I don't know if there's, like, a lefty pitching on Sunday for Oakland. But if he's back, like, Dana said back of the weekend, early next week. So he could play Sunday. Could play Sunday in Oakland. If he's playing two games in Sugar Land, that means he's playing. Is he playing tonight, or is he playing? It's either tonight, tomorrow, or Friday, Saturday.
I would think he's going to be here the whole weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you're right. And plus, Dana did kind of hedge a little bit. He said back of the weekend, early next week. But if it's early next week, he's flying to Seattle. He's flying to Seattle with the team. He's meeting the team. 0635 Bregman. What scares me about Bregman's long term, I'm afraid the Astros will sign him at a discount because he knows he can't get more anywhere else. I hope they don't fall for that trap because a bad player at a discount is still just a bad player. I disagree with this. I wouldn't mind getting Bregman back at a discount. Now, I'm not going multiple years. Mm-mm. Like, if Alex Bregman wants to sign a discount, like, I don't even think it might be. It might not even be a discount. It might be his going rate at this rate. Like, it might not be the discount for Alex Bregman. It's going to be what he is worth on the open market because he had a bad year. If he continues to have a bad year, I don't mind bringing Bregman back on a one-year deal and maybe even a second year on a team option or some sort of vesting option.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, you know, the easiest way to say it without saying it, that you can do a throwaway mutual agreed second year.
Yeah.
But regardless, if you want to go, hey, if Alex, because if you want to give the player option, because of the fact that if he performs at a decent level, it's up to him to think if he wants to test the market, or that you can get him at a substantially discounted rate for an extra year, so be it. But I'm expecting at this point it's going to be a one-year deal, so he buys himself an extra season to try and, you know, bet on himself and prove he can get back to who he's been for the majority of his career.
Like, I'm partially with the texture that I'm not giving him a multi-year deal,
like
almost in any circumstance. But I'm okay with Bregman being on this team next year if it's a one-year deal with options tacked on to the end and the team has an out. Which, I mean, if he continues this pace of play, that's what he's looking at. Cody Bellinger had a great year last year and got a one-year deal with options tacked on to the end. And he had a good year. He had a bounce-back year. And I don't think Alex Bregman's going to be this bad all year, but if Bregman has a 730 OPS, Bregman's not going to get this huge contract with multi-years. He's going to face a huge dose of reality. And plus, like, baseball teams have wisened up on these free agent contracts. You don't, like, you'll still see the Aaron Judges, and Juan Soto is going to go nuts this offseason. Shohei Ohtani got the greatest deal of all time. Like, they'll go nuts on the elite of the elite. These guys who are, like, second, third, fourth tier players, MLB's wisened up on those type of deals.
Look at how many guys were almost done with teams were almost done with spring training and hadn't had deals yet.
Yeah.
When you talk about Snell and Montgomery on the pitching front, when you talk about Chapman and Bellinger and some of the guys that were late that didn't know where they were going to be and started to get a little fidgety in terms of, when am I getting a deal? I got to sign a contract. I got to get into a camp and get ready for the regular season.
you're right. There are teams that are going to become a lot more frugal and a lot more wise in terms of not being as careless and throwing money and years at players when they know that the return on investment is hardly ever there when you get into those kind of deals. It's going to be really interesting to see what Bregman's market is going to be at the end of the year, because he has to. He has to in order to really entertain getting out into the market and seeing what he could get and expecting any kind of a big deal. He has to be able to pick it up, and he's got to show you signs that he can keep it going, because we saw him pick it up for a short period of time, and now he's right back to being at the Alex Bregman from the start of the year. That's a scary proposition for teams to go, I want to give you 5 or 6 years, and I want to give you $30 million plus a year. I don't see it happening.
I don't. Like, if he had – and look, hopefully he gets better, and we're not talking about this Alex Bregman. But Alex Bregman right now, season numbers, when you look at everything, is hitting 209 with a 607 OPS. Let's say he goes into free agency with a 209 average and a 607 OPS. What is he getting? What is he getting on the open market? I think he's getting maximum $20 million for 1 year with maybe like team option, mutual option, vesting options, but where you can get out of it. Like, that's the maximum Alex Bregman will get. And $20 million might be generous. That might be high.
I was thinking between 12 and 15 on a team that thinks he finds it on a 1 year deal.
Yeah, I can see a team getting desperate, but 20 might be high, I'll admit.
I think the only team that gives him more than that is the Astros, saying we've seen enough of him and know his work ethic and know everything about him to know. Plus, with the defense thrown in, and that I don't think they have anybody else necessarily ready to just take and fill his shoes anyway. That I think that you could say, okay, maybe 15 to 20 gets him 1 year with an option, yeah, just so that he has a chance to bet on himself and give you an extra year to figure out what your long-term plan at third base is.
Yeah, the Astros really don't have, like, people mentioned Will Wagner. Will Wagner's playing the right side of the infield more than he's playing the left side of the infield. And then the DaVincio, I think, I don't know how to pronounce it. He's kind of supposed to be the next guy, but he's been out the entire year with a wrist injury. So, like, he hasn't shown you that he's knocking on the door to take Bregman's spot because he's been hurt. Last one here, Texas Tea Lake City. Do y'all think Dubon needs to play more first base?
Not right now, because it seems like you're not going to that's going to be later on down the road when you figure out what you're going to do with Abreu, because right now you're getting a first baseman back at some point on this road trip, or in the very near future Abreu's going to be back on this club. So those are going to be your two first basemen. I think that, you know, Loperfido and Dubon, if Abreu doesn't work out, are going to be the first two guys that are going to get run at first base. I think, to your point, if when all these roster moves start taking shape and they keep doing and they activate Abreu, if Loperfido's the guy that goes down, then he needs to just strictly play as much first base as he possibly can, so that if Abreu is finally done for good and they sit him down or pull the plug, you bring Joey Loperfido in and he's your guy, because Dubon's too valuable. Mm-hmm. And he plays too many positions. And if you're going to move, if Kessinger ends up being one of the moves, the casualties made in the roster game, then you need Dubon even more to be that flexible, you know, guy that could be your utility.
I'm going to hedge here. I'm going to say not yet. Not yet, because, I mean, Brady's about to be back up, and you're going to give him at-bats, hopefully not more than one start every 4 days, but he's going to have a chance to earn those at-bats back. If we're talking at the end of June where he still is just, you know, hit nothing, then you're probably looking at DFAing him, quite frankly. And if that's the point, and you bring Loperfido back, or if Loperfido's still here, he's still a lefty. Singleton's still a lefty. Dubon hits lefties well. Dubon, I think, would be a decent platoon option at first base, considering what you have. He's below average offensive player, especially at first base, but considering what you have, I could see him getting starts at first base against lefties, especially if Chaz McCormick starts to hit well and Jake Myers hits well. Like, those are all three guys that hit lefties well, and how do you get all three in the lineup? Jake in center, Chaz in left, Dubon at first base.
If you do that, do you then have to have another utility infielder on your roster?
I mean, you can carry Kessinger if you're DFA. Faying Abreu.
Yeah, I just think that if Dubon's going to be that guy to be more getting more run at first base, then I think you absolutely have to bring another utility infielder and keep him onto the roster. If it is Kessinger, then that's enough. He doesn't impress me, excite me, or give me any of, you know, reason to believe that he's going to be anything other than an emergency situation.
No, exactly. Like, you're only playing him if there's an injury. Because, I mean, even like if you're giving Altuve a day off, then, I mean, Dubon would just play second, and then either Singleton or Loperfido would play first base. But I wouldn't mind upgrading that position at the deadline either, though. Like, bringing
totally
another Mauricio Dubon type. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. What positions do the Texans have camp battles. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, broadcasting live from Texas Star Grill Shop. Love this place. Love Texas Star Grill. The grills here are fantastic. You know what else I love? Gentle Ben. I've been telling you for a while that Gentle Ben is the best, and it is the best. It is the very, very best. We have listeners all the time. We had a listener the other day call in. You're underselling Gentle Ben. I picked it up, and it's so good. It's the best vodka, best bourbon, best whiskey I ever had. We have listeners walk up to us all the time. Gentle Ben, you aren't lying about that. I'm not. It all starts with the finest ingredients, classic, time-honored distilling methods. Gentle Ben uses their innovative process that removes the harshness and heat that's found in most spirits. You get all the flavor with none of the burn. Gentle Ben takes away the bite, takes away the burn, and the result is unparalleled smoothness and an enjoyable drinking experience. You'll love what's not in Gentle Ben, including Fusel oils. That's right. Fusel is the German word for bad liquor. You're not going to find bad liquor in Gentle Ben. Never has been, never will be. Gentle Ben offers vodka, gin, straight bourbon whiskey, cask strength bourbon. All are fantastic. All are in my rotation. What's in yours? The next time you head to dinner or go to your favorite bar, ask for Gentle Ben. Look for Gentle Ben at the liquor store. Pick up a bottle today. If you're looking for plans, head to the Gentle Ben tasting room. If you're going to an Astros game soon, they got a Gentle Ben bar right there to the left of the Crawford boxes. Or you can just order straight online. That's right. GentleBen.com. Learn more. Learn the incredible story, legacy that is Gentle Ben. But also order straight from the website. Have it delivered straight to your door. GentleBen.com. Gentle Ben, three parts craft, one part science.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Star Grill Shop on Shepherd and 59.
0002 says four fingers of Gentle Ben and one giant chunk of ice. I do like my bourbon on a big rock. That is true. We are broadcasting live from Texas Star Grill Shop. New product alert, Texas Star Post Oak Cooking Wood, only $4.99 per bag this weekend only. So get out here, Memorial Day weekend extravaganza. Take a look at this Texas Star Post Oak Cooking Wood. It's fantastic, great flavor, great for Texas-style barbecue. A huge truckload sale on Franklin Barbecue Pits. You can save up to $1,000 because they have a special partnership with Aaron Franklin. Where else can you save $1,000? Sale ends May 31st, but get yours now before they're gone. Texas Star Grill Shop, best grills at the best price. Texans OTAs finishing them up, and what's interesting, I mean, there's a lot of fun questions about this team because the Texans are good and they're relevant again, which is a great spot to be after having to deal with the sexy Rexy Burkheads, the fighting Rex Burkheads, the David Cullies, the Lovie Smith, the Jack Easterbys. This organization has put us through hell, quite frankly. So it's good that they're good again because it does lead to interesting football conversation and chatter. One of the things that I find interesting, especially this time of year, because OTAs are kind of like the precursor to training camp, what positions will the Texans have camp battles for? Here was D'Amico Ryans talking at the OTAs the other day, saying that he wants competition on his football team.
We want as much competition at every position on our team as possible. So, you know, not just the back end. You talk about, you know, offense, defense line, receive every position. I feel like the more competition you have, the better your team actually gets. So I always speak about iron sharpening iron. So if our guys can really compete against each other and be their absolute best, that's going to make everybody around them better. So I want.
There you go. Competition is good. You have competition. Let's go around the horn and see where the Texans have comp. They don't really have comp at quarterback unless you want to have a quarterback two conversation, which I'm not really interested in having a conversation. Running back Joe Mixon's your guy. They talked about Damian Pierce like he was the clear-cut number two. And, I mean, I guess he is. Like, is Jawar Jordan going to take his spot? Like, at what point does that come? At what point does that become a question?
I think it's going to be looked at very seriously going into camp. But I think that they'll watch a lot of the waiver wire and they'll monitor teams as they get into tough decisions at the end of camp. I firmly believe there's going to be a running back number two that's not on this roster yet.
Okay.
When they play game one.
Okay. So that would add a camp battle that we just don't know yet. If it's Jawar Jordan, I don't see that coming to like the halfway point.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, maybe the quarter point of the year, like on a really aggressive plan. But even then, I think that that's, you know, an outside chance. Now, watch out for J.J. Taylor. If I've told you once, I've told you 100 times, watch out for J.J. Taylor. Receiver, I really don't think that there's a whole lot of competition at the top. Like, obviously, your top three are Nico, Diggs, and Tank. Where the competition comes is after that. Like, is it Noah Brown? Is it Robert Woods that's going to be your veteran receiver? I would lead Noah Brown. He was a free agent that they brought back. You're not going to re-sign a guy and they'd be like, okay, we're going to cut you before the season starts. So you might be looking to keep one of those two guys, and I think that decision is actually pretty obvious. And then maybe you're talking about Mechie Hutchinson as a guy that you would be willing to at least try to practice squad, which if you're trying to practice squad them, then you're making them, you know, where any team in the NFL could pick them up, making them available. So I think that's where the battles become on the Texas
receiver. Don't forget
Skronik
now, too.
Yeah, I forgot about him. Good point. Well, he's a fullback in my mind, huh?
I think he's going to be in the mix there. I think that he might get. He gives you a lot of options, and I think speaking to the point that D'Amico wants all this competition. I think on the offensive side of the football and the skill positions, the third running back is going to be a competition. I think more so than who's going to be the two, because like I said, I think they're going to go outside for that. And from the receiver's standpoint, I think you lump those guys at the back end of the receiver room and think that when you start looking at cutdowns and guys that are going to earn their spot. Skoranek's going to be in the mix, and Woods is another veteran, and Noah Brown's a guy, like you said, with the contract that they went out and kept him, that he will be firmly given every chance. Mechie seems like a guy everybody's talking up, but they know as a draft pick that's been through some things, you'd like to see him be able to step up. Hutchinson's a guy that I don't expect as much from, but again, another draft pick that has potential that maybe, depending on what he worked on and how he fits in, he could surprise some people, but I think there's definitely competition in the back end of the wide receiver room.
There's, I'm with you on Skoranek. I think that he probably does. I mean, you traded for him. You didn't give up much for him, but you traded for him. So if you're trading for him, you're probably going to have him on the roster. And you're only going to keep six receivers usually. I have a very hard time seeing the Texans keep seven. There might be an injury in camp. Like, that's very normal for a football player to get hurt. But if you get out of it healthy, you're looking at Collins, Diggs, Tank is your big three. I think you're keeping Noah Brown over Robert Woods, so he's your veteran. He's your fourth guy. Skoranek's your jack of all trades. He's your five. I think it's between Mechie and Hutchinson for the final spot. Because if they make it out of camp healthy, Woods is gone or traded, and that final spot is going to be a developmental receiver. It's either going to be Mechie or it's going to be Hutch. Between those two, I'd rather keep Mechie than Hutchinson.
I think so too, because I think when he went through the cancer deal, we saw at Alabama a guy that has a lot of tools that should be able to translate to the NFL, and I think that he can catch the football. I think that last year he was just trying to get his football self right after getting himself right, and I think that we might be able to see, based on what he's done all offseason and the fact that everybody's talking so highly of him and the guys that have worked with him and worked out with him and watched him have said he looks fantastic, I think he has the bigger upside than Hutchinson. That's the way I would go as well.
I also think that I think there's a 50-50 shot, maybe even greater, that you could slide Hutchinson to the practice squad. I think there's a somewhat decent chance that he would not get picked up. I think it's 50-50 that you could put him on the practice squad. I mean, he was a sixth rounder last year. He was like fine in the limited roles that he had, the limited opportunity that he had. I don't think that he would. I mean, I'm 50-50. I'm 50-50 you could hide him on the practice squad.
I think you'd try. I think that team saw pretty good size, pretty good speed. I think team saw enough that when he was playing last year, you know, his hands a little bit and being able to catch in traffic might be an issue. But I think that team saw enough to where I think he was noticed. I don't know how long he would last if you put him on the practice squad.
Tight end two, I think, is a position to watch. Brevin Jordan, Kate Stover, who was, you know, of course, the tight end for C.J. Stroud at Ohio State. Certainly Schultz isn't getting pressed for his starting job. On the offensive line, I really don't see anything other than left guard. Like, left guard is the big one to me.
Not center?
No, I think that's Juice Scruggs' job. Yeah, I don't really like, who you think it's Patterson fighting for that job?
I think Patterson showed you early in the season that he could hold his own. So then it becomes, is Juice needed at the guard position, and is he part of the competition? That's where I could see both positions kind of being competitive in camp.
Yeah, you might have like three or four guys fighting for two jobs, but Juice is guaranteed to get one.
Right.
So, like, if Jared Patterson looks better at center than Kenyon Green looks at left guard, maybe that's the move. Although, I think that they have more stock in Juice Scruggs, and I think that they view him long-term as a center. And the only reason that he played left guard last year was because he was hurt at the start of the year. Patterson was, like, locked in as the center, and then there was an injury to Jared Patterson.
Yeah.
So, like, it was kind of a weird situation. I think that Juice Scruggs is going to be, like, the everyday center from right from Jump Street. And I think they'll move Jared Patterson over to guard to be in the mix with Kenyon Green to see if they can fight for a job there. The corners are interesting to me because, like, I think that you have three corners fighting for the opposite spot of Derek Stingley. I think Yokuda's there. I think Lassiter's there, the rookie. And then, of course, C.J. Henderson is there. If Lassiter doesn't win the outside corner spot, I think he just plays nickel.
Right.
But that's going to be one that's very interesting. Linebackers, I really don't see a battle there. The defensive line, not real. Maybe the one-tech defensive tackle between Foley and Settle.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be a huge rotation. I don't see the safeties being a battle with Petrie and Ward.
As long as Ward's healthy, right?
Yes. But, I mean, we're assuming healthier. Now, I think Bullock can, like, maybe play because someone gets hurt and then maybe keeps the job, but I think that's more like during the season. But that second corner spot is very interesting.
Second corner is priority one that's going to be looked at for competition, and rightfully so, and that's going to be fun to watch. I'm with you. I think that it's going to be between Okuda and Henderson early, but let's not count out the fact that Lassiter could actually start out inside and maybe move outside by the end of the year.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. And I think speed, as we've said all along with him, whether it's, you know, running his 40 at the combine or just game speed, that's going to be a huge key for him. And I think in regards to Bullock, I think that he's a guy that's in there long term. Obviously, they drafted him. And he's going to be one of the two spots probably as soon as next year. Can he work his way onto the field, and does he get to be needed on the field because Jimmy Ward still can't stay healthy? Because otherwise, if Jimmy Ward gives you anything, and the fact that both Jimmy Ward on the backside of the defense and then Al-Shaair in the middle of the defense, having all that experience with D'Amico, can only help to make your defense be more continuity and more effective if they're both able to stay healthy and do anything on the field.
Yeah, he's definitely their safety of the future that's going to take Ward's spot. The Texans played like 28 safeties last year. Like they were signing Kareem Jackson late in the year because they were so depleted at the safety spot.
Two of them are still around, right?
They brought back Murray, who got hurt last
right.
year. And there's another one, too, that they brought back.
Wasn't the hyphen.
Oh, MJ Stewart. But he's more of a special teams guy, MJ Stewart. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener. But he was pressed into action a little bit last year, too. 713-780-3776. Where does the Texans' offense stack up against the rest of the NFL? It's the Bees broadcasting live from Texas Star Grill Shop on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. These deals that Texas Star Grill Shop has going on right now are incredible. You can save $500 on a Traeger, $800 on a Blaze, $900 on a Weber, $300 on Gosney Pizza ovens, and $200 on Napoleons. Memorial Day weekend extravaganza. Huge sales on all the top grill brands. Best grills at the best price. Huge package deals on the Big Green Egg. They offer free design services for outdoor kitchens. All the components you need, from top-of-the-line grills, sleek cabinetry, to outdoor refrigerators, side burners, sink stations, bar centers, everything you could possibly want. Also, if you haven't heard about the club, you need to join the club at Texas Star Grill Shop. You're missing out. Head to 975grills.com right now to join the club. Or just mention it when you come in. As a member of the club, you'll enjoy special in-store discounts that can't be found anywhere else. Discount they have rolling right now. They send it out today. 20% off any one item. You have to join the club, 975grills.com. 20% off any one item during their Memorial Day weekend sale. From Traeger to Weber to Napoleon, they have it all. Stop falling for the trick of walking into these big box stores and buying the first grill that you see that's probably not any good. Full free installation. You don't have to worry about 100 pieces in assembly, a box unloaded on your driveway. Full free assembly and delivery if you're a club member. We mentioned those outdoor kitchens. You got to take a look at those as well. Join the club, 975grills.com, for the best barbecue grills at the best price.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Are you ready for more independence as a financial advisor? Are you ready for more growth and control over your future? The Independent Registered Investment Advisor, or RIA, model might be right for you. There are many paths to independence, and Schwab Advisor Services has helped thousands of advisors make the move with confidence. From defining your vision to successfully transitioning your clients, Schwab helps you build your roadmap to independence. To find your path, start with Schwab Advisor Services at advisorservices.schwab.com/path today.